This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
The U.S. and Japan close in on an ammunition deal to boost American and Ukrainian stockpiles. Plus, music companies sue Twitter over alleged copyright violations. And could oil demand peak this decade?
The IEA is saying that's a permanent shift, that we'll be driving to the office less, we'll be therefore consuming less gasoline. That's what they see peaking very soon. That's definitely the first thing to fall.
It's Thursday, June 15th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News. The top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Let's begin today with a look at the global economy. Yesterday, the Fed pressed pause on rate hikes, leaving its benchmark lending rate unchanged after 10 consecutive increases. And yet, there is still a ways to go before U.S. inflation is in line with the Fed's 2% target, and so we should expect more tightening later this year. By contrast, China cut rates this morning as it contends with new and gloomy growth figures, while New Zealand has officially entered a recession, though maybe that's what its central bankers wanted. Here now to make sense of all of that is Wall Street Journal finance editor Alex Frangos. Alex, let's first off just talk about the market reaction to yesterday's Fed decision. Not a huge reaction by all indications. How is that rate or lack thereof being interpreted?
I think with some calm, partially because it was expected, the inflation has been coming down and the Fed sends out these signals ahead of time through speeches and interviews and things. And so people had a sense that this is the decision that was going to be made. And when it's not a surprise, there's not a lot for markets to react to. The other thing is markets have just been in this period of real kind of low volatility, very quiet. For whatever reason, we get into these cycles where what seems like medium-sized news or big news doesn't really rock markets anymore. And I'm sure we'll get into a more volatile period at some point, but not just yet.
Are markets similarly unmoved by today's impending decision by the European Central Bank? What are we expecting there?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit more uncertainty there. Europe was slower to raise rates, and yet inflation is as much, if not a bigger problem in Europe than it is in the U.S. So people are expecting for them to continue to raise rates. And what that sets up is a really interesting dynamic. The U.S. Fed is on hold. The ECB is still raising rates. And then we're starting to see China today cut rates. And you mentioned New Zealand having entered into two quarters of negative growth, meaning they're in a recession, which is what a lot of central banks are aiming for. They're trying to slow down economies. They don't want them to slow down too much, but they want to take the sting out of inflation. And the way to do that is to slow the economy.
Does it seem like a formula is taking shape here about how you sort of square that peg, how you tamp inflation while not sending economies into full-blown recessions?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to overplay that New Zealand's a tiny economy and its recession is also tiny. It's not a full-fledged recession as we'd think about it in the U.S. with major job losses and things like that. So we need to take that into account. I think the formula is get rates up and then wait to see how they affect the economy, because when a central bank raises rates, the impact is not immediate. It takes months, many months, sometimes years before the effects are felt in the economy. So what the Fed is basically saying is, hey, we raised rates a lot. Inflation is starting to head in the right direction. It's not where we want it. So we're going to not raise rates this month. But they've left open the possibility that they're going to raise rates in the months ahead, that if inflation doesn't keep coming down, especially core inflation, stripping out energy and food and looking at the core parts of inflation, especially wage-driven inflation that you see in services, they're going to continue raising rates. So they paused for a month, but there could be more ahead. So yeah, that does seem to be the formula.
The outlier then is China, given a raft of poor economic data they've been showing. What's happening there?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting. We're heading into probably another stretch where the global economy is kind of not in synchronicity. You have the U.S. doing pretty well. Job growth is really good. China, second biggest economy, very late to come out of the COVID lockdowns, obviously only really earlier this year. And so they're just at a different phase. People thought that the Chinese economy would kind of jump right out of things having been locked down for so long. But in fact, it's been a bit slower. And a big part of the Chinese economy is still exports. They make stuff, right, that we buy. And we're not buying stuff right now. We're buying services. And so the Chinese economy is not in robust shape. And so they're having to lower interest rates and make it easier to borrow and easier to get money out into the economy.
That was Journal Finance editor Alex Frangos. Alex, thank you as always for the update.
Thank you.
And we should note that new U.S. retail sales data is due out this morning, a key indicator given that consumer spending accounts for about two-thirds of economic output. Economists surveyed by the journal are expecting a seasonally adjusted 0.2% drop in May retail sales compared to a 0.4% increase in April. Coming up, how Japan could bolster U.S. ammunition stockpiles, a reputational blow for Boris Johnson, and music publishers take Twitter to court. Those stories and more after the break.
ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kinda heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
Ukraine's military counteroffensive against Russia could soon be getting a boost from Japan. We are exclusively reporting that Japan is in talks to provide artillery shells to the United States, which would in turn send shells to Ukraine. Our Asia security correspondent Alistair Gale told me that the potential ammunition transfer would signify a major pivot for Japan, which has long curbed its exports of lethal weapons, and it could come at a crucial time for both Kyiv and Washington.
The Ukrainian offensive that we're seeing now to try and push back on Russian forces has increased an already voracious appetite for artillery. And they've been using around 90,000 rounds a month, which is, when you work it out, it's about one round every 30 seconds. A lot of this has been coming from the US. The US has sent over 2 million rounds. It's dipped deep into its own stocks. It's drawn down from its overseas supplies. We hear from American officials that they speak regularly to their allies asking for assistance. They do feel that the defense industrial base in the US is highly stretched. So the fact that Japan is involved here shows us how important this is and how wide a net that the US is spreading.
British lawmakers have found that former Prime Minister Boris Johnson deliberately misled Parliament about the parties that he held during the COVID-19 pandemic. In wrapping up its year-long investigation, the House of Commons Privileges Committee said that Johnson's conduct and his response to the committee merited a 90-day suspension from Parliament. And while that's likely to be a largely symbolic punishment given that Johnson resigned on Friday, our UK correspondent Max Colchester says the report is particularly damning for two reasons.
Firstly, it's the first time that lawmakers have found that a sitting prime minister deliberately lied to Parliament. And secondly, it's really the nail in the coffin in the short term, at least, to Boris Johnson's parliamentary career. And Johnson has reacted with fury, putting out a 1,700-word statement saying that this committee was a kangaroo court and that their findings were a load of tripe. And he stands by his argument that his attendance at these events was necessary, as he saw it as a key part of his job to keep his staff motivated during the pandemic. So we're seeing really something quite unusual in the UK, which is a former prime minister bringing Parliament into disrepute, effectively, which is quite a strong thing in this country.
Twitter is being sued by a group of music publishers for alleged copyright infringement, with the group representing artists from Taylor Swift to Beyoncé seeking more than $250 million in damages. The Elon Musk-owned company is one of the only social media platforms that hasn't forged licensing arrangements for music. In comparison, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snap, and TikTok all pay artists when users post videos that include their songs. Journal tech reporter Sam Schechner has more on how the case is likely to play out.
According to the lawsuit, Twitter has said that it doesn't think it needs licensing agreements to have this music as long as it responds to takedown requests for copyrighted material. That's under something called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Twitter has, since Elon Musk took over, been in a cost-cutting mode. So you could wonder if Twitter will fight this in an effort to avoid paying more money. Elon Musk has a track record of not wanting to back down in legal disputes and has demonstrated in the past a willingness to go to trial rather than settling. So we'll have to see what ends up happening and if this one ends up making it to court.
Twitter didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. Demand for oil could peak this decade. That was the head-turning forecast this week by the International Energy Agency, which is shifting up its own prior forecast from last October that oil demand wouldn't drop until sometime in the 2030s. And here with a look at what is behind that accelerating timeline and the potential effects should it come true is Wall Street Journal energy reporter Will Horner. Will, the war in Ukraine not showing any signs of stopping. There are still so many growing economies with robust oil demand. How is it then that the IEA is arriving at this forecast?
Hi, Luke. Yeah, thanks for having me. I think it's helpful to take a step back for a moment and think about the two biggest events of the last 3 years or so, the COVID-19 pandemic and the war on Ukraine. The IEA is saying that both those events have had huge impacts on how much oil we consume, and that they're going to have long-lasting impacts, you know, impacts that are going to be with us permanently. So in terms of the pandemic and the shift towards remote working, the IEA are saying that's a permanent shift, that we'll be driving to the office less, we'll be therefore consuming less gasoline. And in regards to the war on Ukraine, the IEA say that that has dramatically accelerated a shift among predominantly Western governments to transition their economies away from fossil fuels and towards renewables, towards electric vehicles.
All right, so it sounds like it is really flagging gasoline demand that's driving this.
I guess you could say gasoline demand is what the IEA sees as the first chip to fall, basically. That's what they see peaking very soon. They expect it actually to peak this year and then plateau and then begin declining in the next few years. So yeah, that's definitely the first thing to fall. That's how the IEA view it.
Though there is still going to be oil demand, of course. Is the IEA saying where that's predominantly going to come from?
Yeah, so countries in Europe and North America, as I said, predominantly in the West, predominantly in developed countries, they're undergoing this transition away from fossil fuels. The major, fastly growing economies in Asia, most notably China and India, they kind of are, but certainly not at the same speed as the US or European economies. Depending on who you ask, you'll get very different views for how long that demand in Asia will remain strong. You know, the IEA have laid out this forecast that says they think demand globally will peak within the next 7 years, perhaps. If you speak to OPEC, the cartel of major oil producers, they broadly agree with that thesis, but they have a much, much longer time frame for when they expect demand in Asia to start declining. And to the same extent, increasingly, if you speak to major oil companies, you'll hear them echoing a similar view to OPEC. They increasingly take the view that demand will remain stronger for longer than we realize. And they're increasingly taking the view that as long as there is that demand, they're going to be around to serve it, basically.
That was Wall Street Journal energy reporter Will Horner. Will, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Luke.
58% of insured adult Americans ran into problems using their health insurance in the past year, according to a new survey released today by the Kaiser Family Foundation. The most common problems were plans refusing to pay for care, not covering medications, and denying or delaying approval for medical services. The survey also found that only about half of people with insurance problems were able to get them resolved to their satisfaction, with many consumers not realizing that they had the right to appeal health insurance denials to an independent third party. To read more about how to deal with potential problems with your health insurance, head on over to WSJ.com. West Coast dock workers at several of America's busiest ports have reached a tentative 6-year labor deal with employers. If ratified, the agreement would cap more than a year of contentious negotiations that disrupted trade from California to Washington State. Dock workers had taken a number of labor actions in recent weeks that raised concerns about potentially wider disruptions to the U.S. supply chain and economy. And in potentially welcome news for fans of live music, two of the biggest U.S. ticket sellers plan to change how they display prices. The White House said today that Ticketmaster and SeatGeek will soon show shoppers all-in pricing that includes fees beginning later this year. That follows a push by President Biden last year to crack down on so-called junk fees that are added to everything from sports tickets to hotel stays. And finally, 2 years ago, Congress overwhelmingly passed a law to make life easier for people allergic to sesame seeds. To help reduce the risk of accidental exposure to allergens, the law required that manufacturers label sesame on their products starting this year. But how many bakers have responded to that law is making life worse for the estimated 1.5 million Americans who face potentially severe health risks from sesame. Wall Street Journal food and ag policy reporter Christina Peterson explains.
So instead of keeping a product sesame-free and labeling it sesame-free, what they've instead done is they've just added sesame to more products. Oftentimes that's sesame flour. And then they clearly say contains sesame. So from their end, they've correctly labeled the product. But for people with sesame allergies, it means that they've actually have fewer safe options to eat now. And sometimes it's in the very same products that they used to safely consume. I talked to a gentleman who used to eat a bagel. That bagel has sesame flour now, so he can't find a bagel that works for him at the grocery store. The FDA has said that they don't support this practice of manufacturers, but they also haven't said that they're doing anything about it. So we're sort of at this weird impasse, and we'll just have to see what the next step is from Congress or the FDA or manufacturers.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.